The Business Buzz Podcast.
You're tuned in to The Business Buzz.
Good day and welcome to The Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Vow FM. That's the voice of Wits, broadcasting live from our studios right here in Bloemfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Leon Mob Justice Gavaza and I'll be your host for today. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, before we get into the main business of today's Business Buzz show, I think easily one of the biggest stories involving the world of commerce this week has been the Clicks story. In a normal situation, you'd expect that the fact that the economy contracted by about 16% in the second quarter of 2020 would be the big news. But no, it was actually a gaffe by one of the biggest pharma companies in the country. Now, there's been a lot said and written and talked about this matter. But in summary, pharmacy group Clicks permanently removed a brand of Unilever's hair products from its shelves in the wake of an anti-racism protest against a controversial advert. The advert actually described the hair of a black model as dry and damaged and that of a white model as being fine, flat and normal, sparking a social media backlash that actually saw the beginning of an EFF demonstration. Now, there's been a lot that's been said, as I said, but my take is on two quick things. The first one is just the more that some of these events happen and occur, we're seeing a lot of companies getting into trouble over a lot of these issues internationally and locally. People, will think about the way that brands, you know, actually position themselves. One of the big things and big trends that we're likely to see continuing and possibly extending further is just the fact that, firstly, corporate social responsibility, which has traditionally been the reserve of making charitable donations and, you know, things like that, that now, you know, your CSI or CSR is actually extending beyond just your charitable contributions. That being a a socially responsible citizen, corporate citizen, sorry, also has to do with how you're marketing yourself, positioning your brand, talking to your customers, and actually respond to crises as they happened. The second big thing to note is just how much of a mess has actually occurred. But more than anything else, what's more concerning is the fact that a group of educated men and women across two really big companies in South Africa sat down, came up with this advert. It went through so many processes because in large companies there are a lot of checks and balances, and people decided on both sides that this was a good thing before it actually became the mess that it is now. And I think a lot more just needs to be done within companies to give people voices and to actually vet some of these things before they go out. So that's just a quick take just around what has easily been one of the biggest issues during this week. But sort of sticking around the issue of, you know, how you represent yourself on social media and online, in today's show we're going to be talking about how people are actually representing themselves within a corporate environment and how much control companies might have over communications of staff, and what type of laws are being made just around an increasingly digital economy and more digital communication that's going on out there. A recent case at Discovery actually saw employees that were fired for distributing messages through a WhatsApp group about the company that was actually deemed to contravene Discovery social media policy. So because of all of that, we decided to talk to some experts just around what this means, how can you protect yourself, what does the law say, and also at the same time, with more and more people working at home, what are some of the ways in which companies are monitoring the productivity of their employees online. So to help us to navigate this topic, we're going to be speaking to Nelisa Ngolana, who is the managing Director at PR Trends ZA about some of the apps employers are using to track employees' productivity. And then at the same time, we're also going to talk to Amanda Manyame, a digital law and policy advisor, about the cybercrimes bill that is set to come into law very soon, and some of the legalities of expressing yourself online within a corporate context. Also coming up, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And then we're also going to be getting into the Buffalo Index, where we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. Now, remember that you can keep in touch with us on social media. We are via FM, that's Voice of Wits. On Facebook, you can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're hashtag BusinessBuzz, and our handle is at VowFM. You can also stream the station live on VowFM.co.za, and remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz show are available on vits.journalism.co.za. So that's how the show is looking like. Definitely make sure you don't turn that dial. Coming up next, we're going to be getting into the Business Wrap.
Business Wrap with Ken Sweatman.
In our Business Wrap, we give you some insight into the week's top trending business and economics news. And to help us to unpack what's been going on this week, it's been quite busy out there. We are joined by our financial expert, Ken Swettenham, on the hand. Ken, greetings to you. What are you keeping, what have you been keeping an eye on this week?
Well, certainly the biggest news story of this week has been the second quarter GDP figures, basically South Africa's growth figures, which came out. And, well, the news was bad, and we expected it to be bad. When the country's been in lockdown for most of the second quarter and very little economic activity, we knew there would be a sharp retraction. And there was indeed. The South African economy lost 16.4% during the second quarter alone, and that's the biggest drop in the South African economy since the Great Depression back in the early 1930s, almost 100 years ago. So yes, it was bad news indeed. The only good news, I suppose, coming out of that is that we would expect the third quarter to improve because the economy is moving again. But the only sector of the economy that actually grew during the second quarter was agriculture. And that was simply because agriculture were able to continue operating during the lockdown from April, May and June. Every other sector of the economy lost money to a greater or lesser extent, with sectors like construction down over 90%. So really, it wasn't good news figures at all for our economy.
I think one of the things that our listeners might benefit from is to understand from you what the difference is between the 16% decline or the contraction that you just spoke about versus the 51% contraction that is being quoted in other parts of the media where they're saying that it's been annualized. Is there a difference between these numbers?
Well, it's just using the same numbers in different contexts, basically. 16.4% was a quarterly decline, not an annual decline. And that works out, if we take out what happened in the first quarter as well, on that sort of trajectory, then the economy would decline by over 50%, as you point out, if that continues for the rest of the year. And that would be the annual figure. Now, there's no way, in my opinion, that we're going to have an economy declining by 51%. It was just people making the figures look worse than they already are, in my opinion. I do expect, obviously, quite a sharp increase in the growth rate for the third quarter as we've moved down into lower lockdown levels. And hopefully in the fourth quarter, there is talk of even going down to lockdown level one in the next week or two. And if that happens, the fourth quarter should improve as well. There's no doubt that 2020 is going to be a horrific year for our economy. Most economists are predicting a contraction of the annual rate between 7 and 10%, which is, for an economy like ours, is absolutely devastating in any case. And that's certainly what we're looking at for the year. And you know, the news isn't good no matter which way you look at it, even though there are going to be economic improvements coming through now in the third and fourth quarters.
And then I think the other interesting one for me is just, I guess, appreciating the reality versus what's actually on the ground. Did you think that the 16% was going to be, you know, that that it was going to be that high? Because just talking to other economists and just people in the fraternity, some people were, you know, estimating that it was a 10% contraction for that particular quarter, others at 15. So for you, was it that much of a shock?
Well, to be honest with you, not really. It might have been a little higher than most people expected, but not a lot higher. As you already mentioned, figures of 10 or 15%. It was a very difficult one to predict because, quite simply, you've got to keep in mind most of us alive today in today's economy were not alive back in 1931. So we've never experienced this sort of economy or this sort, the sort of fundamentals making up this economy. So it was extremely difficult to predict exactly how much the losses were going to be, and as you correctly pointed out, the figures being bandied about were anything from 10 to 15% for the quarter. It came in slightly higher than that, but it's not a total shock. We knew it was going to be bad, and we knew that as an economy we were going to take some pain, and that's exactly what happened.
And then I guess on the last point, what other data points have you also been, I guess, keeping up with? Just as the stream of economic data has started to actually start flowing again over the last couple of months?
Well, we've got to keep in mind the economic data never stopped flowing. Believe it or not, the economy flows around the world regardless of whether we're working from home or not. And we've got to keep in mind we've actually had some surprises on the, and I'll obviously try and give your listeners some good news in what is a very poor environment at the moment. But as we all know, our local all-share index dropped about 35% in March alone, and as the lockdown kicked in, and it looked absolutely terrible for local share investors. And our local share index is just about back to where it was before the lockdown started. Against all odds, it's holding its own, we should say. And the market was up 1.35% today after a few days of going down. And that was because of an improvement in the American markets. And we look at even something like the oil price, which is very relevant to us because of the fuel price, but also because of a big share like Sasol. The oil price went up 2.35% today. Sasol shares went up 4% on the back of that. So there are certainly areas where people are making money if you are able to spot these growth points. And the currency is holding its own as well. It's again, we weakened slightly today. But we're currently trading at 16.87 to the dollar. And the pound is another one I look at, 21.66. Remember, the dollar was touching pretty close to 20 at one point, and the pound getting up towards 25. So we've come back from those levels. So the markets are actually holding their own in what is a very, very poor environment, and I think that's some good news.
So you heard it, that there is some good news, particularly around what's going on in the markets with the all-share index together with some of the recovery that's happened in the Rand. That's been us with Ken Swettenham, our financial expert, giving us a roundup of the week's top economics news. The big story at the moment is that contraction for the second quarter of 2020 in South Africa, 16% contraction, 51% on an annualized basis, and he was just explaining to us what the difference is between the 16% and the other figure that is being floated around. Also talking to us about what it might mean going forward, as we expect a bit of a recovery and much better GDP figures when we now report the third and the fourth quarter. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we continue with the show. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Rap with Ken Swetman. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
Since we are talking about what it means to express yourself online within the business settings and the like, we decided to go online to talk about the new cybercrimes bill. You know, companies and businesses may need to have a specialist on hand that can actually help them to craft and enforce policy around how they operate digitally, how people within an organization communicate digitally, and how the company itself communicates with the rest of the world. So a social media manager becomes a very important element to have, important skill and expertise to have in a company. And looking at the average social media marketing manager's salary across South Africa, we are coming in at around 125 buffaloes. That's 12,500 rand per month, or 150,000 rand a year. And also, if we had to delve a little bit deeper, looking at some of the top provinces in the country, you will find that the average salary does go up when you are in Gauteng, that's sitting at around 200 buffaloes or 20,000 rand. In KZN, you're looking at around 150 buffaloes with 15,000 rand per month. And then in the Western Cape, that's slightly below the national average that we spoke about earlier, at 123 buffaloes or 12,300 rand per month. So if you're a business and you're looking to hire yourself some expertise in the realm of social media, that's what it will cost you.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into our main topic for today, and we are talking about what it means to be operating in a digital economy, doing business digitally, but more importantly, what it means to be, communicating within a digital space in the corporate and business world. As many of you might know, COVID-19 has led many people to be that formerly worked in office environments to be working from home. At the same time, we've seen that in business, a lot of people are using things like WhatsApp, you know, to actually communicate with people. But what type of controls, measures are there around what you do and say in some of these forums, some of these platforms, and how you use the technology? Let us know on Facebook what you think, what any of your experiences have been. On Facebook, we have our FM or Voice of Vids. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vids Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VarFM, and then our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. So to, you know, get things rolling, we are going to be talking to Nelisa Ngulana, who is who will be able to talk to us just about some of the apps that employers are using to track employees' productivity from home, and perhaps some of the, you know, ethical issues that centered around it. Nelisa is the Managing Director of PR Trends ZA. Nelisa, greetings to you.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
No. Thank you for being with us. I think just as a good place for us to begin the conversation, are there any standard regulations, you know, that are put in place during the time that employees, you know, start working at a new employer, you know, to actually make sure that they employ with the company's data security regulations, or, you know, just being made aware of, you know, what it means to communicate or do, you know, their work on digital platforms?
So I think the general employment contracts still apply according to the basic conditions of employment act, but with that usually come with company policies in the onboarding process as in your orientation into a company. The major difference now would be the fact that obviously some people come on board working from home instead of going to a physical building to carry out their job. So obviously the employment contract would specify these things, and then also obviously speak to the company's IT policies with regard to any equipment a person might have, or whatever company information that a person might need to access remotely in order to do their work.
And then, you know, one of the things that we're really, you know, focusing on is this issue of a cyber crimes bill that is meant to come into law soon. Commonly in a workplace, what are some of the common cyber crimes that employees tend to actually commit in companies? And is it really that deep?
Yeah, no, it is that deep. Crime is deep of any kind. So things like, I mean, some things that people might not be aware of would be things like sharing customer data without the necessary approvals within the company. As we know that customers' information is protected by the Protection of Personal Information Act. You know, situations where a person, for example, misrepresents themselves and acts on behalf of the company, of their employer, without getting the necessary approvals, or just good old plain fraud, right, where people either steal money or in-kind things from customers and from employers. So obviously, if it's fraud, that is treated as, you know, as per normal criminal procedures. You know, a case will be reported, etc., and those processes will follow. So things like sharing customer data, obviously internally there would be investigations in order to see what security breaches have been kind of breached. I mean, we've seen that with the recent Experian data breach, where somebody simply asked for customer data and immediately they got it.
And then, coming back to employers specifically, because we now, you know, have some insight, like you said, on what type of crimes employees can actually commit against their organizations in the cyber realm. But in terms of employers themselves, because right now we are experiencing this life where people are working from home, what are some of the ways in which digitally employers are actually monitoring the productivity of their employees vis-a-vis tracking them? I think that's the best, that's the better way. You know, how are employers making sure that people are doing what they're meant to be doing?
So employers have found, you know, a lot of different ways to do that. Some have, you know, from simple things like WhatsApp groups, where people are expected to do a check-in in the group every morning, or people do morning calls, or people submit job registers and things like that. Some people have Google Hangouts. Some people are using apps like Trello or Asana or Slack. Some are using MS Teams, Microsoft. MS Teams has a color coding system that shows when somebody is online and when they are away. So employers are using a mix of technologies to make sure that people are clocking in and are doing the work during the day.
You know, when you're talking, you know, it certainly sounds like there are a myriad of ways that they can actually see whether you're away, online, all of that. Would you say that this is tantamount to, you know, spying or an invasion of privacy, or are we simply substituting the line of sight that a manager would normally have over, let's say, subordinates in a normal office environment?
In terms of security, I mean, when you use company equipment to access the internet, your social media, or even your personal emails, you know, you can't. The expectation of privacy is limited there because you are using someone else's equipment and their data. So, you know, the general line of march is that people need to be cautious when they use their employer's equipment for personal things. Some employers do of monitoring software that employers can use to see everything you do on your laptop or phone. Even if you do delete files and clear your browser history, it does not mean that your internet activity can't be tracked.
Now, Nelisa, it really does sound as if for the people that might be listening and now really, you know, introspecting about how they've been using some of their work laptops, and in some cases we've heard of employees who've had their entire workstations moved to their houses, and now they're actually thinking to themselves about, you know, all the things that they've been doing on those machines. When does it actually become a danger? Does it become a danger just on an ongoing basis, or would employees rather protect themselves in a situation where maybe, you know, you're caught wanting and then it does trigger some type of investigation into what you've been using your machines for?
Yeah, so I think the general rule is that a person needs to understand the company's IT policy, they need to understand the social media policy as well as the expected code of conduct so that you know what is acceptable and what is not. So, for example, you know that you are allowed to go, you can go to social media and social media sites, and when you can do that, and if you can use your devices, your company issued devices for personal use. Some employers do allow it, some don't, based obviously on the rules that they've set. So it's important to understand your company's policies around any equipment that you have or any software that you are using that you need to use in order to do your job.
And beyond that, because I can definitely understand what you're saying, you know, when you are using company resources, there are certain policies that guide that usage and all that. But within the personal realm, you know, how much control or jurisdiction do companies have over the ways in which employees actually, you know, communicate? Because if I'm on my personal phone and I'm in a WhatsApp group and, you know, we're saying all these things, how much, you know, say does a company have over that type of communication or what a person is posting on their personal social media pages?
So, for example, I mean, it depends on what you agree with your employer. So, remember, your employer is not just going to impose things or, you know, try and catch you out when you are doing things. It's important to understand, you know, what productivity measures are there. So, for example, some employers would go as far as installing software that would count keystrokes to track the website you're visiting and actually take screenshots to keep tabs on what is on your computer screen at one time. So that's kind of like quite heavy, invasive almost type of management. Others don't. They just expect you to drop in. So it's important to know what is allowed in your company, as in what you signed for and agreed to, you know, what you agreed to adhere to before. Because most of the time, many of these things, you know, you'll find a person post something on social media and then they get into trouble with their employer. It's not something new. It's always there in writing somewhere. So people need to know, if I'm going to be on social media, I like being on social media, I need to understand where does my personal begin and end, and where does my employer and my job begin and end.
And then I guess on the last point, what advice would you have both for, on the one side, employees and employers, on the other side? Because you've already given us a lot of a lot of ways in which people can just be made aware. But in terms of just making sure that you stay safe on both sides, as an employer, making sure that your employees are actually doing their work, but at the same time you're just making sure that you don't become like a police state, like a mini police state, and at the same time as an employee making sure that you just stay on the right side of things.
Yeah, but I think working virtually has obviously brought in new dynamics in terms of how we work, from the fact, the expectation that, you know, people need to work certain hours. A lot of the time, working hours have become so flexible. So employers and employees need to make sure that there's a clear arrangement around working time, break time, as well as obviously understanding that working alone in isolation can lead to, you know, anxiety, people feeling down, people feeling lonely. So employers need to also make sure that, you know, they kick in programs that will kind of still encourage staff morale and encourage, you know, connectivity between staff beyond just work.
So that's been us. We're with Nelisa Ngulana, who is the managing director at PR Trends ZA and also the founder of Coding Mamas. And she was just giving us some insights into what it means to work digitally. And increasingly, because of the lockdowns, a lot of people are working, you know, more remotely, and just giving us some guidelines around what it means to do that, and also what type of policies companies tend to have just around communications, IT, the equipment that you use, and just making sure that you stay on the right side of things. Because if you go against your company's policies, sometimes it's very hard to walk back from something like that. And she just started off by telling us that yes, there are a number of cyber crimes that are committed by employees, you know, sharing of unauthorized data, such as customer data, in an unauthorized manner, and it is that deep. Any crime is that deep. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we continue with the show. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
In our COVID Business Watch, we look at the impact of COVID-19 on various businesses in and around South Africa. And in this week's edition, it is based on someone who started a company during the pandemic and is actually having a great event in partnership with Alan Gray soon. Our producer Slindile Msibi spoke to Standiwe Msomi, who is the co-founder and chief operating officer of the Gym Company. She's currently pursuing a BCom degree, majoring in economics and finance at the university, and is the co-founder of the Finance Gym Company. She is a Golden Key Scholar, writer, presenter, and among other numerous entrepreneurial endeavors that she has gotten herself into. The Finance Gym is one of the few that actually translates into a direct impact into people's lives. She is 20 years old from Durban in KZN. The company is actually operating from there and provides financial literacy education through their online website. So she was just answering some questions for us. When did you decide to start the Finance Gym during the pandemic? Actually, why did you do that? And also, what are the three main things young people can do to track their finances during this time? What is your event about? What are you hoping to achieve? And what advice would you have for those struggling with the budgeting? Here's what she had to say.
I would say that the pandemic gave us extra motivation to launch our website. This is the time when people are connected more than ever virtually and working online. And so we know that audiences are plugged in, and why not plug them in with content to help them increase financial literacy rates? And that's why the work that we do here at the Finance Gym is so valuable to helping people map out their financial goals, especially at a time like this when economies have taken a knock. Knowing how to use our money wisely can definitely help us navigate the space of personal finance. We as the finance gym think that the three main things that young people should really look at when it comes to their finances, especially during this time, is first of all, budgeting. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And so a budget can really help a lot of us see where our expenses are drawn up, where our income is coming from, and what are the things that we buy that really aren't helping us move forward and achieve our financial goals. The extra coffee that you buy at Starbucks that isn't necessary could really be a penny that you put into investing in your business or in capital markets or debt securities. And so that's why we believe that budgeting is a special skill that we all need to cultivate. During this time, we hear every day on the news that a company has retrenched a plethora of workers and unemployment rates have skyrocketed. And in the midst of all of the economic battles that we face, it's important for us to become creative about how we generate extra income. If you have skill or a love, how you can capitalize on that and start your own bakery. If you are good at developing apps and good at technology, how can you help companies that are now looking to pivot their businesses to operate online? Being creative and innovative about developing multiple streams of income is so imperative to survive in such a fickle economy and in such volatile times that we live in. And then thirdly, young people should really look at how they set financial goals for themselves. It's important to look at the future and ask yourself, business or whatever else that you want to do, these are things that we need to think about. And to reach financial goals, we need financial skills. We need to learn budgeting skills. We need to learn about investments, about annuities, about retirement funds, and all of these things. So setting financial goals for yourself is incredibly important because it allows you to divert your attention to learning the skills that you need to get to that goal. Our event that is coming up on Friday is an amazing event that we've curated in partnership with Ellen Gray. We've titled our event Defining Your Financial Future because we do believe that in order to have a successful financial future, you need to know that you are the author of your financial destiny. And so we want to equip our audiences with the skills to make wise financial decisions to develop a strong foundation for their financial futures. Our event will be on Zoom from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. and we have amazing speakers, some from Ellen Gray and one that we've reached out to. His name is Zali Mambuele. He is a property entrepreneur and is very, very known for the impact that he's made in the property space and within his different property endeavors. And our two speakers are from Ellen Gray, and they'll also be touching on numerous subjects around personal finance. We're going to be talking about things such as budgeting, certain financial goals, multiple streams of income, and investment options that you can make. And we think that these are aspects that young people can look at to integrate into their own personal financial destiny and be successful. Our advice to those who are struggling with budgeting is plug into all the networks and resources that you can. There's so much information out there about budgeting. There's so many books about budgeting. Our website has so much information about budgeting. And so knowledge is power. Knowledge gives you the power to change the course of your life. And we believe that organizations such as ourselves and other organizations are really there to give you that knowledge to be the author of your own financial destiny.
Mark Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are discussing the new cyber crimes bill and some of the implications that it might have in and around the world of business in South Africa. And to sort of shed some light on what's actually going on, what it actually means, we have decided to turn to a legal expert. We're joined by Amanda Manyame, who is a digital law and policy advisor, to just take us through some of these things. Amanda, greetings to you.
Hi, Madiwa. Thanks for having me on today.
No. Thank you. I think just as a point of departure, the SA Cyber Crimes Bill, what does it actually entail and actually deal with when it comes to online cyber crimes?
Okay, so what the bill does is, because we've now gone to a point where a lot of the crimes are physical, now they are online, this bill makes a number of the crimes that you would have usually physically being done online, now they become crimes in terms of the bill. So some of the new crimes or new offenses that you have in terms of this bill would be cyber fraud, cyber forgery, cyber utterances, cyber extortion, and other types of malicious communications, as the bill calls them. So these would be communications that are calling for violence or damage to property or violence against other people. Or and the big one would be the messages which are spreading what you would call revenge porn or an intimate image that was shared with you.
Yeah. And then I guess on that front, in terms of it actually becoming law, how far are we, do you think, from actually getting it in? Because it is still a bill, which means there are probably processes that still need to be done to actually get it enacted.
So now it has been signed off by the National Council of Provinces, which was the final step for this bill. It has been sent to the president, and the president now has to assent to the bill. That is, he has to give his thumbs up, essentially, and sign the bill to become an act. And then he will give a date for when this act or this bill will now become law. So I can't give you a timeline. As we all know, we had POPI, which was an act from 2013 and only came into effect this year in July. So it could be any day now, or it could be a few years from now, but hopefully it's soon, because the only step left is president has to give his thumbs up and sign it into law.
Actually, I like the fact that you've just brought up POPI. Do you see the country sort of going down this path of enacting more and more, I guess, digital-related laws as time goes by? Because, you know, when it comes to, you know, POPI and privacy and all of that, it took us a while to get to that point. But now there's also a cyber crimes law, you know, hopefully that will come into effect soon. Do you think we are likely to then see more bills being proposed on the digital front?
I would hope so. We definitely should. Working within the digital law space, I do think we need more policy that allow us to be able to use the tech that we have now. So you have an instance where everyone in the country is using a lot of these apps, a lot of the smart devices, but then there aren't really laws that deal with some of the instances that you come across as you use your smartphone, your smart device, your laptop, as you send a WhatsApp message. Sometimes there aren't any laws that deal with that. So we definitely do need more laws, and I think we are going to that point where we need laws that will deal with the fact that some industries are now interlinked, where you look at fintech. So you do need a law that now transcends between the normal banking into more of the technical aspect of it. You also have health tech, whereby you might put your health data into an app, and that is not necessarily a doctor. So you'd have to deal with that from a legal perspective. So I think we were definitely going to where we get more laws. And if it takes a long time, it is laws that we do need in the foreseeable future.
And related to that, because you are talking about, you know, our lives are becoming increasingly digital, and there are a lot of overlaps that are happening, new forms of communication such as, you know, social media and the convergence of different technologies like banking and technology that you're talking about. But another interesting one on the social media or communications front is what people are sending to each other on WhatsApp. There was a recent issue where employees at Discovery were actually fired for distributing messages through WhatsApp, a WhatsApp group chat, you know, about the company, that were actually deemed to contravene the company's social media policy. So from that point of view, what kind of relationship do you think actually exists between the company's social media policy, the cyber crimes bill, or any other laws that may be applicable?
That's actually a very interesting example, because if you look at that, the Discovery case, and I'm only purely basing this off of newspaper reports, because it hasn't necessarily stayed as a CCMA, so we don't have a record of what exactly transpired. But firstly, you have employees that are on a WhatsApp group. I think most of us are in WhatsApp groups, and you've shared things that are maybe unsavory or threats against the company. And when these things were shared, one of the people in the group who's an employee then shared this information with Discovery. And so they were a whistleblower, and they did this purportedly in terms of the Protected Disclosures Act. So already here, what they have shared is protected. And it was done so in terms of the law. And they did this purely because some of the messages being shared were threats. And the Cyber Crimes Bill, when it becomes an act, does deal with threats against damage to property or to persons. And these were damage to, I believe it was damage to property at Discovery as well as to defend the Discovery. So although it is a company that has a reputation to uphold. So what then happens is companies end up having what they call communications policies or social media policies that deal with communications between employees and the company and employees on their social media platforms as well as in the WhatsApp groups. So the reason they do this is to protect the company itself. And this usually goes beyond you using your company laptop or your company cell phone. So you could have been using it on your private cell phone. But the reason they do this is, as a company, we don't want to control what you say, but we do need to manage the reputation or any physical damage that might happen to the company. So you do see where the Cyber Crimes Bill comes in here, because it does deal with that. It doesn't specifically say an employer can have a social media policy or a communications policy. The Labor Relations Act also doesn't specifically say that you can have this particular policy, but it does say that an employee should always deal in good faith against their employer. So as an employee, there are certain things you can do and there are certain things you can't do. But I have realized that to an extent, we don't necessarily attach some form of value to our digital personalities. So sometimes we do share things online that we would have never shared in person. But then as we are seeing more and more, I believe in 2017, F&B had a somewhat similar case as well, and they ended up having to dismiss, I think, two employees at that time. But we do need to get to a point where we realize that we would never share certain things in person in the physical realm, but we do share them online, and we are liable for what we share online. So we do have to be careful, because if it's a crime in the physical realm, it is a crime in the cyberspace.
It one of the things that it does sound like, though, is that sounds very complex. And I say that because there's a statement that you said, we don't want to control what you say, but we want to manage the company's reputation. And those things do seem or sound somewhat contradictory when you look at them on the face. So I guess, you know, that then begs the question of, what is actually said in private, because I want to draw that parallel between the physical realm and what's actually happening, you know, in a digital space. If a group of employees decide to sit in the canteen at a table, right, and say disparaging things amongst themselves, right, about a company, is that not similar to them saying disparaging things or, you know, things that could hurt their reputation about a company on a WhatsApp group? You know, as in how much control can a company actually have over, you know, the lunchtime chats of, group of employees sitting around the table? Or is the issue just made extra or more exacerbated by the fact that it is being distributed on a digital channel?
Firstly, when you send that data message, that WhatsApp message, that Facebook message, you have proof. So now this company, your employer, now has proof against you. If you sit in a canteen and you have said this and it's possibly not even loud, and I'm sure most of us would just whisper, I'm not happy about this and that, there's really no proof to that you haven't done anything. In law, at the end of the day, you need to be able to prove it. So I haven't done anything. I'm just not happy about a certain thing that has happened. And in the discovery case, they were quite unhappy. So you may chatter and say, I'm not happy about this. Oh my goodness, I don't like XYZ. But now when you send it in a WhatsApp group and you've sent it as a message now, you are saying these things, and it seems it went beyond simply stating, I'm not happy about the working conditions. It went to, well, let's do XYZ. Let's cause damage to discovery. So the moment you start saying that, and more so when there's evidence of you having said that, and then you have another employee who whistleblows and is protected in terms of law, it becomes, firstly, it does sound very complicated because there are certain aspects to it. But if you now go to the CCMA or the labor courts, what the Labor Relations Act says is if you are dismissed for misconduct, which is the issue in this case, there are certain things that would need to be proven. So it's not as simple an employer has a policy and you've contravened the policy. There are certain steps that the employer would have to follow. And if the employer is saying that we've dismissed you because this is a gross misconduct on your part, there are certain things that they would also need to prove. Definitely having a thread of messages does not work in your favor. So it is definitely better to go sit in a canteen and talk about it instead of creating a WhatsApp group. I would always say that. I believe back in the day when Facebook was just starting, would always hear, do not post what you would not be happy your mother seeing online. So it's the same thing with the WhatsApp groups. I think you should just always be careful what it is that you are posting. Because in law now, you are finding that some of the things that we do state, we might not be serious, but I don't know that you are not serious. So if I see a WhatsApp message saying that you want to kill me, I definitely will take that very seriously.
And then lastly, you know, very briefly, because we are running out of time, is there any recourse for an employee who's dismissed on some of these grounds, especially if it's, you know, if it's a subjective matter, they may or may not have really been saying something disparaging. The thread of messages is there, but, you know, it's contestable, you know, because on the one hand, it does sound as if the one recourse is the fact that the burden of proof is on the employer. But apart from that, what else can an employee do?
So an employee can go to the CCMA, which is free, by the way. You can go to the labor court, but then possibly starting point in this instance for misconduct would be the CCMA. You lay what's called an unfair dismissal claim. And in terms of this unfair dismissal claim, firstly, if you are dismissed, there has to be a plausible reason for why you're dismissed. This dismissal has to be fair, both substantively and procedurally. So an employee would have to decide, was this substantively fair, as in did I break a rule? Was the rule reasonable and necessary to begin with? And were employees aware of this rule? So if it's not fair, in terms of one of those, then you can definitely take it to the CCMA. And then you also have procedural fairness. So did they have a disciplinary hearing? If it was serious, did they sit down and try find out why these employees say these things? Like you are saying, it might just be a thread of, we were a bit annoyed. Text doesn't have tone. It was said in jest and we're just blowing off steam. It wasn't anything serious. And all 10 employees state this. Then you would also have to say, well, we didn't even have a disciplinary hearing. So from a procedural standpoint, this wasn't fair. So CCMA, labor courts, and the employee is the one that who has the burden at this stage to prove that this dismissal was unfair.
So that's been us with Amanda Manyame, who is a digital law and policy advisor, just giving us some insight into the new SA Crimes Bill. She's explaining to us that it's been given all the sign-offs that it needs, except for one, and it's that is the president. And now that just depends on you know, when he gets around to signing it, for it's coming into force. And then also just talking about you know, this new realm of social media and digital communication, and what type of control companies actually have over what you send and post in WhatsApp groups or on social media. And her advice is just that if you'd rather not have your mother or someone read what you have to say, rather not post these things on social media or in some of these private chat groups. So that's been it on the other side of this. We continue with the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to The Business Buzz.
So that's it. We've come to the end of today's show. Thank you to everyone who was listening. Thank you to our guests, Nelisa and Amanda, for sharing their insights with us. My big takeaway is just that if it's something that you would not want your mother, grandmother to see or hear from you in the real world, rather not post it online or in one of those WhatsApp groups. You can be held liable, especially if you are in a company that has a robust social media policy or communications policy on hand. We're going to be, you know, becoming more digital, you know, as time goes on. We keep saying this, and over the last 10 years, the way that people have embraced digital communications and they've become a mainstay in the way that people do business, it really doesn't mean that government, together with the private sector and public sector players, will be coming up with more robust policies around how they police these things internally. I like what Amanda was saying about that we're likely to expect even more policies coming from the government and companies to be doing more on that front. But otherwise, let us know what you thought of the topic. Let us know, have you been on the wrong side of communicating disparaging things about an organization and being caught wanting in the digital realms? On Facebook, we are VAR FM, that's Voice of Fitz. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Fitz Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAR FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also search for us on iono.fm for our podcast, and you can also get our great content on fitz.journalism.co.za/business. So with that, we've reached the end of tonight's show. Thank you so much to everyone. As I said, thank you to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutlwano Serame, together with our executive producer Glory Mabuza. Our producers Slindle Msivi, Tando Teba, together with Simbarashe Honde. Don't miss The Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that dial. We've got more great content coming up next on VAR FM. So from myself, Leo Mob, Justice Gabaza, and the rest of the team, it is good afternoon and take care.
Mob Justice on The Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.